Several years ago, I learned that most all instructions and directions are written at a fifth grade level. Now, when I heard that, I didn't believe it, but I got in the habit of starting to read different directions and instructions, and I found that that is actually true. If you pay attention to them, some of them are hilarious because what they have written is so obvious. If you have a Rowenta iron, on your iron it has a warning that says, "Do not iron clothes on your body." Years ago, I was snow skiing in Colorado, and Beth and I were riding on the ski lift. We're about 200 feet above mankind. The other skiers down below look like little tiny ants. We're holding on for dear life, and we go past a trestle that has a sign that says, "Warning, jumping from ski lift will result in loss of lift ticket." And I'm thinking, who's going to jump the 200 feet just to get a head start on the course? One time I was walking through a mall, and it had a place where you could get your ears pierced. And the sign that they had right there in the mall was, "Ears pierced while you wait." Well, I'm thinking, how else are you going to get your ears pierced, you know? "I'll be back in about an hour. Will they be ready?" "What? What? Huh? You're a little slow on that one." One time for Father's Day, my mom gave me a set of auto shades. And auto shades, in case you don't know what they are, you put them inside your car. So in the middle of the summer, when everybody else's car is like 98 degrees, not you, 96 degrees, because you have the auto shades. But here's my actual instructions on my auto shades. They say, number one, unfold auto shades inside of car. Number two, push the cutout portion behind the rear view mirror. Number three, pull the sun visors down to hold the auto shades in place. But the fourth one, warning, do not drive car with auto shades in place. I mean, is that really necessary, you know? The instructions might seem so simple, but it still pays to take the time to read them. And those directions are designed to protect you from harm and to ensure that you get the most out of that product. Now, today we conclude our series on sex. And it is important to remember that sex was God's idea. Some have called sex God's wedding gift. And this wedding gift comes with some instructions and some warnings that are written at about a fifth grade level. And they are written so that we can be protected from harm and so that we will be allowed to get the most joy out of this gift within our marriage. God's word makes it clear that it is only for a husband and a wife within the context of a marriage. His instructions plainly say that anything outside of that context is a sin, that it is disobedience to God. And he doesn't want you to get burned by it or injured from this powerful yet dangerous activity. In the first book of the Bible, God begins to unfold some of those instructions in Genesis chapter 2, verses 24 and 25. "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and will be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. The man and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame." Understand that the husband leaves his parents, cleaves to his wife, and they weave in an intimate union as they merge themselves together physically. Now, the merging is not instantaneous. Note the words of Moses. They become one flesh, not they became one flesh. Oneness is not created overnight, even on a honeymoon night. Marital oneness is a lifelong spiritual, emotional, and sexual quest. And regardless of your place in life, today I want to ask you to listen and to apply this message to your own present situation and future situation. According to the demographics of our membership, nearly two-thirds of the people in this room are married. But the truth be known, for many of those couples, the bedroom is more of a battleground than a playground. And we've looked at God's view of sex and the Playboy philosophy of sex, and today we see what your spouse would like for you to know about it. And from a listening perspective and a preaching perspective, this topic is the most delicate of the three. And so I want to convey my thoughts without compromising any confidences within my marriage relationship. And while I want to be transparent, I don't want to be too transparent. But rest assured that this manuscript has been closely scrutinized.
I'm Beth Stone, and I approve this message.
Two more days, and you won't have to hear that phrase for quite some time. Yeah. Max Lucado says, God desires to make you one with your spouse, and sex is one of his tools. Don't overrate it like society does. Don't ignore it like religion has done. Just appreciate it. Appreciate it for the gift that it is. What your spouse wishes you'd figure out. Let's begin with the wife's wishes. What are her desires in order to establish an enjoyable, invigorating, romantic life with her husband? And let me try and generalize three main categories. Her first wish would be that her husband would communicate and take a genuine interest in her. Now, right now, some guys might be thinking, what does that have to do with physical intimacy? And your wife would say, it has everything to do with it. Communication is the key. Husbands, your wife wants you to take an interest in her life, in her pursuits, to become a sounding board that she can bounce things off of, to talk frequently, to hear you call and say, you know, I was just thinking about you. And sometimes, husbands, we can be so short when we speak to our wife. And we can choose our words in a way that demeans them or is derogatory toward them rather than honors them or uplifts them. And belittling conversation and communication is a source of so much marital discord. And God wanted us to understand the seriousness of sex and the joy of that marital privilege and the importance that communication plays in that. He felt that was so important that he even included an entire book in the Old Testament on the subject of romance and sexual intimacy. It's called the Song of Solomon or the Song of Songs. And some of the imagery used in this book, which is the diary and personal journal of a married couple, is somewhat erotic. And yet it is all within the confines of the marriage relationship. Rabbis used to say that no one under the age of 30 should be allowed to read the Song of Solomon because it was so explicit. But remember, it is the verbal interchange of a married couple. And it gives us a model for intimacy within a marriage relationship. And while knowing it would raise a few eyebrows, God must have felt very strongly about it to choose to include it in the Bible. And Song of Solomon talks about the importance of both verbal and physical foreplay in a relationship. And in chapter 4, the romance is unfolded and the pleasure is increased because of taking time to communicate to his wife with words. I've chosen the Message paraphrase. It's a little bit easier for us to understand. And the fourth chapter begins with the husband speaking to his wife. Listen to these words of poetry as they're read for us.
You are so beautiful, my darling, so beautiful. And your dove eyes are veiled by your hair as it flows and shimmers. Your smile is generous and full, expressive and strong and clean. Your lips are jewel red. Your mouth elegant and inviting, your veiled cheeks soft and radiant, the smooth, lithe lines of your neck command notice. All heads turn in awe and admiration. Your breasts are like fawns, twins of a gazelle grazing among the first spring flowers. The sweet, fragrant curves of your body, the soft, spice contours of your flesh invite me, and I come. I stay until dawn breathes its light and night slips away. You're beautiful from head to toe, my dear love. Beautiful beyond compare. Absolutely flawless.
This man goes down her body and praises her. And the passage closes with him saying to her, "You have captured my heart, dear friend. You looked at me and I fell in love. One looked my way and I was hopelessly in love." He is communicating with his wife. And husbands, if you were to talk like that to your wife with genuine sincerity, you would capture her heart. Josh McDowell says, the chief dysfunction in failing marriages is not sexual, it is verbal. Fulfilled marriages are enjoyed by those who share their feelings and have a great amount of openness with their spouse. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 9 says, enjoy life with your wife whom you love all the days of your life. And I have found that when my wife and I are communicating and we're staying in touch throughout the day, we're getting each other's advice and counsel, that things go pretty smoothly, and marriage is great because we are verbally interacting. Researcher Terry Schultz concluded, although many women choose their partners based on sex appeal, research shows that if they had to do it all over again, the ability to communicate is much more important. Communication in a marriage relationship ranks higher than sexual attraction, physical appearance, and even personality. So try to grow in this area. But wives also want their husbands to care, to lovingly serve her. Christian author Dr. Kevin Lehman wrote a book a few years ago entitled Sex Begins in the Kitchen. And the premise of that book is that romance is an all-day process. In other words, what happens in the communication outside of the bedroom sets the climate for what takes place on the inside of the bedroom. And husbands, when you care and lovingly serve your wife, you are displaying that at that particular moment, your wife is much more important to you than you are to yourself. And so you make the late night run for the forgotten gallon of milk at the store, or you wash the dishes, or you change the diapers, or you write out the checks, or you cook the meal, or you call in the afternoon and say, hey, when we both get off work today, meet me at your favorite restaurant. I'm in a small group Bible study with some other couples, and one week we were talking about romance, and one woman said, well, when my husband helps get the children their baths and puts them to bed without me asking him to do it, she said, I find myself very attracted to him that night. That week, I think every guy in that Bible study was constantly giving baths, you know, to their little kids. And I already had one. I don't care. Get back in there anyway, you know. We're splashing water as loud as we can. Yeah, I'm in here, honey. Just helping with the kids, you know. But in those instances, husbands, make certain that you don't have ulterior motives, that you are doing what Paul commanded every husband to do in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Christ sacrificed. He served. His love was evident. His motives were pure. Thirdly, wives wish their husbands would cuddle with no strings attached. Now, women need affection. That means caring, understanding, and respect and devotion comes from you guys. They like to be held knowing that they are safe and secure in the strong arms of their husband. That's why they wish that you would figure out that cuddling may not always lead on to what's on your agenda. So when you're walking to your car after church, hold her hand. Around the house, give her a hug. While she's watching the news, you just give her a massage on her back. And sometimes we guys ignore the communication and the care and the cuddling until we have a desire for pleasure. And if that's the only time we do those things, then we have ulterior motives and our agenda begins to border on selfishness. See, men and women are quite different emotionally, especially when it comes to this arena of cuddling. When a woman says, I just want to be held, do you know what she is really saying? What she really means is, I just want to be held. It took me a few years to figure that out. That is not a cue for you to try to take it to the next level. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28 and 29 says, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church. Now, before we leave this section, guys, at times, we must be willing to put our physical desires on hold and grow in our spiritual and emotional closeness with our wife. Gene Apple says, when Jesus wanted to reach out to us, what did he do? God came into our world and met us where we are. That's why he was called Emmanuel, God with us. And Gene says, guys, if we are going to feed and care for our wives as Christ does the church, we're going to have to get down off of our high horses, step out of our world of career, self-importance, step out of our world of sports, and enter into the world of our wives and nurture them and fill their soul. Because our wives are not impressed by how successful we've been, how many deals we've closed, how much money we've made. What gets their attention is when we leave our world like the Son of God and enter into their world, their sphere, their interests, their careers, their hopes and fears, and we get involved. Now, we don't always like to hear that, guys, but he's right. And that might mean that you go watch a chick flick with her. It may mean that you take an interest in antiques just so you can spend some time together. But find some way to get involved in her life. Well, what do the men wish that their wives would figure out when it comes to sexual intimacy? What are the husband's wishes? You have heard us say before, but when it comes to the sexual relationship, men are wired more like microwaves and women are more like crockpots. Guys are like a light switch and ladies are a little bit more like a mercury light. It takes some time to warm up. Guys are more visually stimulated. Women are more emotionally stimulated. I don't know why God created each of us that way, but he did. And ladies, let me tell you some things that your husband would enjoy in your physical relationship. He wants creativity, not routine. He doesn't want things to always be mundane. Those who always see sexual activity with their spouse as some chore are missing out on God's wedding gift and the joy and the freshness of having a personal, intimate relationship that is for your eyes only. So ladies, light some candles. Put some planning into creating a special moment. Take him out of town for a special night. Or think about how you can dress in your bedroom to increase his attention. Or invite him to lunch someday and then say, you know what? Let's meet at home for lunch. Be creative. Make it an experience rather than a duty. Variety adds spice to your marriage and joy to your husband. Do not allow Satan to get a foothold on your relationship and your intimacy. Keep the thrill and the sparkle and the creativity. And ladies, you put so much planning, so much attention, and you give so much effort, sometimes for some hobby that you might have, or for some activity, or some trip with your girlfriends. But what about pouring that same intensity and interest into the very most important earthly relationship that you have with your husband? Secondly, your husband is concerned with the frequency of your relations. Now, I know that's an earth-shattering revelation there. Is the marital act rarely on the menu, or is there regularity to this celebration? Is it something that both husband and wife look forward to and anticipate? Now, sure, there are some exceptions to this, but surveys consistently show that husbands desire this more often than their wives do. A doctor gave an older couple a terrible report concerning the health of the husband. And afterwards, the doctor requested to speak privately to the man's wife. And he closed the door and he said, "Hey, I got to tell you," he said, it doesn't look good. He said, "It's really bad news." He said, "I think he's got a week to live." But he said, "You know what?" He said, "Ma'am, if you will just pamper him, if you will cook him 3 home-cooked meals every single day, if you will be as affectionate and make love to him as often as you did the first year of your marriage, I think he can live a year or two." Lady walked out into the waiting room and her husband said, "What did he say?" She said, "You're going to die." Some of you enjoyed that joke way too much. So discuss some of these issues as a couple and openly agree on both his needs and her needs. But both need to be flexible and not legalistic. As Dr. Willard Hartley, who shared a very compelling illustration that may help a woman understand a man's sex drive. Dr. Hartley says, suppose there was a stool with a glass of water on it, and the husband was next to the stool where he could easily reach the water. And the wife is next to the husband, but she is immobilized and can't quite reach the water. And the wife turns to her husband and says, "Would you please pour me a glass of water? I'm getting thirsty." And the husband responds by saying, "I don't really feel like it. I'm not in the mood. Maybe in a couple of hours." And the wife says, "Well, you know what? I'm really thirsty now." And the husband says, "It's been a very long day. I'm too tired to get you a glass of water right now." And the next day, the wife, having gone without water, says again, "Will you please give me a glass of water?" And the husband says, "Why do you always have to ask for water? I'll give you a glass of water when I'm in the mood. And the wife can feel her temperature rising. She's not happy. She's thirsty. And the only person who can give her her water is her husband. And so she begins to demand it. And the husband glares at his wife and says, "You're not going to get any water with an attitude like that." And the next day the husband finally says, "Okay, here's your water, but drink it fast and don't be telling me you're thirsty again tomorrow." And the wife drinks, but she does so with bitterness and frustration. It's important for us to make certain that within the marriage relationship, we try to honor one another above ourselves. The New Testament even talks about the frequency of intimacy in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Paul says, "The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife's body does not belong to her alone, but also to her husband. In the same way, the husband's body does not belong to him alone, but also to his wife. Do not deprive each other, except by mutual consent and for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come together again, so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." So he says there may be some times when you do not have physical relations. It may be due to health reasons, or toward the end of a pregnancy, or after giving birth. It might be because of an emotional time that you've gone through. Maybe it's the loss of a close loved one. But whatever the reason might be for those times, it's a mutually agreed upon decision to go without that pleasure. And Paul says so, that you can devote yourselves to prayer during that time. But he says it doesn't go on and on for a long time, because as Paul points out, Satan will tempt you and you guys don't have a whole lot of self-control, he says. Now, other than after the birth of each child, in my 19 years of marriage, we have only tried this at one other time. We were about 5 weeks from moving into this building, and I was swamped with responsibilities and very nervous about the move and the entire transition. And so Beth and I decided together to put our times of sexual intimacy on hold for those final 5 weeks. And we intentionally tried to replace those moments with additional prayer and focus on asking God to bless this major transition in our lives and in the life of our church. It wasn't easy, but we both felt that God was using that brief season of our marriage to focus more on the spiritual and less on the physical. And the long-awaited day finally arrived. It was Christmas Eve, 1998. We moved into this sanctuary. We had 4 worship services, and I was ready for my fast from the physical to end. And all day long, I kept having all these television reporters come up to me, and they would say, "Are you excited about moving into your new facilities?" And I would honestly look back and say, "You have no idea." Those 1 Corinthians 7 times in your marriage should be rare, and they should be mutually planned. Creativity, frequency, and affirmation. Your husband needs affirmation from you in his career, in his appearance, in the bedroom. Tell him if he pleases you, or let him know when he wears an outfit that you think he looks good in. Ladies, talk to your husbands about your physical relationship, not to your girlfriends. You save those conversations for your husband and him alone. And the same with the guys. The male ego needs a lot of strokes and validation. So wives, you need to affirm and to encourage him. You might be shocked if you paid attention to some of his needs, what kind of a person he might become. So at times, take the initiative when it comes to your physical relationship, as he will find that to be quite affirming. And listen to the affirmation given by the wife to her husband in Song of Solomon chapter 5.
"My dear lover glows with health, red-blooded and radiant. He's one in a million. There's no one quite like him. My golden one, pure and untarnished, with raven black curls tumbling across his shoulders. His eyes are like doves, soft and bright. His face is rugged. His beard smells like sage. His voice, his words, warm and reassuring.